Greetings, friends of Essential Aromatica. This episode is another spotlight on aromatherapy with my very special guest and teacher, Amy Galper. Amy is founder of the Clean Beauty Product Launch Accelerator, a 12-week invitation-only mentorship program for emerging clean beauty entrepreneurs. Amy is also a member of the Credo Clean Beauty Council, co-author of two books, Plant-Powered Beauty and the Ultimate Guide to Aromatherapy, and the founder of the acclaimed New York Institute of Aromatherapy, where I studied. This is New York City's first in-person aromatherapy school. Amy also has an online aromatherapy certification program called Aromatherapy in Action. Learn more about Amy's work and various offerings through her website, amygalper.com, on Instagram at Amy Galper, and of course, see many of her offerings in one place at Linktree, which you can find through Instagram, of course. So Amy, thank you for being a guest and spending time with me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Amy. I love that both our names are Amy, but I'm really happy to be here. And I'm just so excited that we wanted to have a conversation today.
Well, definitely. You are, if it wasn't for you and starting the school, which is like three blocks from my apartment, I don't think I would be doing what I'm doing today.
Wow.
So you were at the right place at the right time in the zeitgeist of, I think, aromatherapy in its second or third generation. So before we get into my questions, you've seen aromatherapy change, right? What do you think?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, I started learning about it at the end of the 1990s, like around 1999. I was kind of introduced to my first essential oil probably around 1997, 98, and started getting really drawn in and curious about it. Ended up getting certified back then and started a solo practice in conjunction with my shiatsu practice. I was doing shiatsu, which for those of you who don't know, it's an Asian form of body work that follows the same meridian lines and kind of philosophies and approach as acupuncture, except instead of using needling, we use our fingers to stimulate the different energy points. So at that time, I was, you know, trying to incorporate the energetics of essential oils with kind of the energetics of shiatsu. And that's kind of what I was doing. And certainly back then, oh my goodness, nobody really knew what an essential oil was, at least being living and being in New York and being part of kind of the wellness scene here. I mean, people knew of it, but it was not like it is now. It's not as ubiquitous a subject as it is today. So yeah, over the past, I guess now 23 plus years, I've seen a huge change. And I guess one of my favorite changes that I'm seeing is that more and more people just know about essential oils and aromatherapy. The consciousness and awareness of it has like grown exponentially.
Yeah, that's really awesome. And it goes from, I think what you used to say, it was kind of in that yoga world space and that I want to use the word woo-woo. It's like, ooh, what's an oil? And now it's becoming more in the mainstream. And we'll get into highlighting your classes and stuff later, but there is a need for education still, right? There's a need for people see the oil, they want to know more about it, and there's a need for safety and awareness. Would you say that's?
Oh, 100%. And I actually think that now that people's awareness of essential oils has exponentially grown, I would say over the last like 4 to 5 years or even a little bit longer. I mean, the all major media's store, you know, outlets are talking about essential oils. Like I bet you could go into any online, you know, major media outlet and just put in the search like essential oil or lavender oil or eucalypt that there's going to be an article. So, you know, 23 years ago, no one was writing about this stuff. It was very inaccessible. It was hard to find essential oils. It was just a very different world. And so now that the awareness has grown and the accessibility has grown, I believe more than ever that today, in 2023, which is the time of this recording, that we need to have more people educated. Because as more and more people know about it, we're in need of more and more educated users and teachers and leaders and influencers who understand the safe and proper use and how these oils can be used to really improve our health and our well-being.
Yeah, that's beautifully said. And I want to put that on the back burner because I do want to feature your clean beauty experience, because I believe that's a lot of your focus now, and then segue into talking about essential oil education and standards. It's ubiquitous, isn't it? But I didn't really think about clean beauty until I met you. It wasn't a word, a phrase I was really aware of, other than herbalism and Rosemary Gladstar and that kind of quote crunchy way of being clean beauty, you know, like in the farm woods, picking flowers and stuff like that. So I'm going to read my question here. You've been in the clean beauty space before it was, quote, trendy, and you have a book out called Plant Powered Beauty. And I'd love for you to share with our listeners what clean beauty is.
Of course. So I think that's a great question. And a lot of people are asking that right now because the word clean beauty, the phrase, is actually relatively new. So 10 years ago, there really wasn't a term clean beauty per se, right? And this idea of kind of body care products that didn't incorporate concerning ingredients or harmful ingredients really didn't come into play until probably the earlier mid 2000s. Now, I don't want to actually say that, like, I don't want to say that that's the truth across the globe, because actually there were brands that started in the late 19th century, like at the end of the, you know, 1800s, things like, you know, Weleda, things like, you know, other brands out there, Jurlik, or there's another one, Kneipp, right, out of Germany. Like, these were brands that were coming from a philosophy kind of reacting against kind of the industrial age, right? When petroleum was like this new concept and chemistry was this new concept, which was all emerging at the end of the 19th century into the early 20th century. And so these kind of cosmetic body care brands came in to kind of hearken people back to nature, to say, look, you can still take care of yourself with natural ingredients, etc. And so natural beauty, green beauty, beauty skincare that was focused on plant ingredients is something that human beings have been doing since the beginning of time. I mean, we have record of beautiful books that were written from the Egyptian era to the 9th century in Persia, etc., of actually people like writing down their quote beauty recipes, skincare recipes using plant ingredients. So it's not like a new concept. But when we get to the 21st century and we get to the 2000s, when people are becoming more aware and conscious of the food that they're eating and where their food is coming from, that started to bleed over into people being curious about, okay, well, I want to know what farm my parsley is coming from. I want to understand that my apples are grown organically. Like, right? People started really paying attention to food. And this was the beginning of what was called the slow food movement and farm to table, right? And that started to bleed over into body care and skincare. And people started to become more aware, like, oh my gosh, what are the ingredients in my skincare products? I'm putting it on my body. It's being absorbed into my body. I should have more awareness of this. So the terms that describe plant-based beauty, I would say starting at around, you know, the late 90s into the mid 2000s, were words like eco-beauty, organic beauty, green beauty, non-toxic beauty, you know, all these other kinds of terms. And the reason is there's no like regulatory agency here in the United States that kind of regulates, you know, what ingredients really go into our cosmetic products. So these words were kind of bantered around and nothing really stuck or had standards affiliated with it. Mm-hmm. So what started to happen in the mid-2000s, and like I would say, like probably 2014, 15, 16, 17, is certain retailers, certain influencers, certain thought leaders in this space started to say, hey, wait a minute, there needs to be standards written. Like the consumer is demanding that we know what is in our skincare products, and there's no like governing agency that's really looking out for this. I mean, there are agencies, but everything's kind of privately owned or connected to kind of big cosmetic companies, et cetera. So anyway, long story short, Credo, which is a beauty retailer that specifically focuses and is committed to body and skincare and color cosmetics that are harm-free, you know, that don't leave kind of any concerning residues either on our body or on the planet. They started to evolve their own standards, meaning that they wanted to have guidelines in order to vet brands that were coming into their store, because they wanted every customer that came into their store to know and be like, well, if Credo checked it, I know that it's not going to have this ingredient or that ingredient or that ingredient, in the same way that Whole Foods has a certain guidelines and certain, I guess you would say, standards about what they accept into their body care department, right? Mm-hmm. So what you started seeing is retailers like Whole Foods, like Credo, like Detox Market, like now even Ulta and Sephora and Target, having departments that are saying, look, we have certain standards, and if you want to sell within our quote clean department, you need to abide by these rules. So now, 20 years ago, we didn't have this kind of unified definition or standards that were emerging really from consumer demand. So when we talk about clean beauty today and how it's different from those early terms back in, you know, the early 2000s, like things like green beauty or eco beauty or organic beauty or whatever it was that they were calling it, is the difference is clean is really encompassing the whole circularity of the beauty product and the beauty industry. And so what I mean by circularity is, you know, 15 years ago, or 20 years ago, we were just really concerned about the ingredients. Like, what ingredient is in it? Is it going to be safe on my skin? Is it, you know, going to off-gas something horrible if I throw it away? Like, what is that? But now, clean is now encompassing a whole other, I would say, kind of philosophy and almost a paradigm shift. Because what's happening now is clean also means we want to know that the company that is creating this product, like, has integrity. Like, are they, is the culture of their company, you know, equal? Are they supporting all people from all lives, all backgrounds, all orientations, everything? Like, is their philosophy and their company culture aligned with those values? And when we source an ingredient and we're getting it from, let's say, you know, this tiny village in, you know, I don't know, in Southeast Asia or South, you know, or Eastern Africa or wherever it might come, that we want to know that that ingredient is being farmed and harvested and processed with integrity, that the people who are farming the land are treated well, that the way that they are, you know, harvesting the and planting is actually aligned with sustainable values and sustainable practices. So suddenly clean is just beyond just the fact that the ingredient isn't going to, you know, cause any kind of residue, but actually it involves now this whole circularity of the product in culture, in people, in impact on the environment, impact obviously on our own health and well-being, and also really turning to the founders, the farmers, the processors, the ingredient suppliers, and making sure everyone is held accountable. Yeah. So clean now is a much bigger word, and it's really taken over the industry globally. And there are chemists now, cosmetic chemists, contract manufacturers, packaging companies. Mm-hmm. Everyone now has adopted this terminology of clean to mean that we are aligned with these values, etc. So it's really beautiful to see how it's evolved. And it's really the consumers who are demanding it, you know? So it's really beautiful to see these change coming from such a grassroots place.
Yeah, I've met some millennials, to use that beloved word, but generationally, I've worked with people younger than I that came to me and they're like, I need to have a complete trackability of my products, of where I get my paper from, of where I'm sourcing my ingredients. So it's definitely, like you said, you see so much more than I do, but I've seen it generationally move. And I think in a very positive way.
Oh, I think I agree with you.
Super positive.
I think this is so important. And, you know, it really did start within our food system. Mm-hmm. You know, people, it really did start with the slow food movement. Right.
Amy, when you were saying clean beauty, I didn't think about this until our conversation now about clean eating. When that suddenly became a thing and I started to read about it in magazines, I'm like, oh, clean eating. Okay, that makes sense. But it was never a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that that had a big impact. And, you know, men, all of the ingredients really that we're using, I would say most of them that we're using in our, you know, more natural body care, plant-based, minimally processed skincare products are food-based, mm-hmm. you know? So there's a lot of parallel there. And I think that's really important for people to understand, because whether we're eating it or we're putting it on our bodies, right, it's still being metabolized in the human body in the same way. So we want to be able to connect with the ingredients that, you know, are more easily metabolized, right?
Yes. I love that you said that, because it's just like when we smell an oil, even if we're, quote, just smelling, it's going into us. I think it's good to keep saying these things. So people are, I've said that to people and they seem shocked. Like when you're smelling something, you are taking it into your body. And like with mm-hmm. body products, you know, you are, as you beautifully say, metabolizing these things and they're becoming you, and you have to process them.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I love this. You just gave like the whole world a crash course on clean beauty. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
So on that note, I'm excited because I've known you for a few years now, since 2015. And I remember some of your journey, and you relatively recently, if this is right, you started your clean beauty product launch accelerator. So in line with sharing what that is with people, I want to put my beef out there that I know there's a lot of brands out there. There's a lot of people that want to do stuff. There's this big clean beauty movement and a lot of marketing. So in line with what you do, like what helps set people apart when they're like in the clean beauty space? What helps set people apart without giving all your secrets away?
No, I think it's an excellent question. And, you know, number one, the quote, clean beauty industry now is growing exponentially, and it is taking over the conventional beauty industry. Companies like Revlon, L'Oreal, Estee Lauder, they're all replacing their ingredients with more sustainable ones. Mm-hmm. They're trying to be more transparent about what they're doing and what they're using. This is now becoming mainstream. Stores like Sephora, Ulta now have what are called conscious beauty departments, and they're growing exponentially. So this is soon and very quickly going to become the norm. And if you look at any recent market research reports, this sector of the industry is growing exponentially every quarter. So what that means is, number one, yes, there are way more products in the market that are clean than there were before. But number two, there's more demand, right? So I think there's more space for more players in the field. So it shouldn't deter or make anyone feel like, oh my God, it's already oversaturated, right? Mm. Well, no, come on. People have been making cosmetics for, I don't know, 100 years before the whole clean thing came. Did that stop anyone else, right, from coming out with it? No, because the demand has always been so high. There's always been interest in what's new and new angles, et cetera. So there's plenty of space for new players. So I want to just say that. Number two.
I just want to say, as you're saying that, you're reminding me that different people have different needs. Different people have different skin types, different parts of the world. So I could just focus on people that are like me if I wanted to, right? So
100%. And then actually, that's a beautiful segue in what I was going to say, because you were asking specifically, what is the differentiator? Like, what is your unique selling position? Like, what is it that you, if you were coming out as a clean beauty entrepreneur, what is it that's going to make you different from everybody else? And I just got off a coaching call with all of my mentees. I coach, as Amy said, an invite-only group of emerging clean beauty entrepreneurs or new entrepreneurs who are already in this space but are feeling plateaued or stuck at whatever, you know, stage they are in their startup journey. So I'm coaching a group. And today we talked, or I would say I kind of gave them a little rah-rah, little coaching moment that really what differentiates everybody is their own unique story, is the founder story. So that is what people are buying. That is what people are connecting to on social media. That is what people are attracted to. And I say this over and over again to all of the new entrepreneurs that I work with, is that the way to get focused is to try to just think about selling to one unique individual. And then once you nail that and it's genuine, it's authentic and it's coming from a place of real intentionality, you will sell to everyone. And I think where people in the beginning feel intimidated is they see all these brands, all these different products, and they feel like this, you know, anxiety, like I got to sell to everybody. I can't miss a sale. I want to appeal to everyone. I don't want to leave anyone out. And that's actually the worst thing you could do, because really within the space, what people are looking for is that uniqueness, and that unique flavor, that unique perspective comes from you, the founder, because you're unique. There's no one else like you. Right. And so it's your perspective, your input, your heart that is going to differentiate it. And so if you can lean in hard to that, you will be successful.
That is incredibly inspiring. And as you were sharing that, well, I like to ask you this. When you started your first business, and I'm wrong, I think that's Buddha Nose, right? But I'll speak for myself. I think it's easy to hide behind. Like, I don't want to put my face out there. I don't want to share my story. I'm a little camera shy. And I kind of hear you saying like, no, just try to get over that and like come up with, be authentic, be yourself. And a lot of coaches say that, right? Be yourself.
Yeah. And that is what people are buying. You know, there are like, I don't know, hundreds, thousands maybe of face oils out there, right? But they're all selling really, really well. Why? Because each face oil has a story, has a new person who's attached to it, has a new take on it. Even if they're using similar ingredients, they feel different. They smell different, right? Because it has almost that imprint of the founder on it. So that's really what you're looking for, is to really, and I'm not saying you have to wear your heart on your sleeve and divulge to your audience, like all this like uber personal stuff, but it has to be, you know, an expression of you, you know? And if you look at any brand that's really successful, you can kind of see, I guess, what you would call their brand fingerprint. That's really unique to what they stand for. So that's something that we do in the accelerator.
That's really awesome. I'm so excited about your latest venture, the Beauty Accelerator. And I want to touch on something you just said about like the smell of something. And one of my questions was, how do you know how essential oils fit into the clean beauty industry? And you just mentioned like it could be the scent of something, like
oh, 100%
face oil they must have. Yeah.
It's 100%. And I think that's another kind of element of clean, like another facet of the circularity of that definition is that clean, right, means it's clean in this very like holistic way, in that it, that the products, skincare products now are not just enough to get rid of your wrinkles or even your skin tone. Like we want deeper meaning in that experience, right? People are looking for a wellness connection to their beauty rituals and their beauty experience. And that folds right into that definition of clean, right? That clean, you mentioned clean eating, right? Clean is a lifestyle. And so this needs to be kind of understood that by incorporating scent and essential oils and fragrance, you know, that's coming naturally, maybe through other types of aromatic extracts, is really important for, I think, the holistic experience of beauty at its core.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that because it is part of the experience. And there's a strong trigger with, I'll bring up Procter & Gamble. There's a lot of research on scent and memory, as we know, as aromatherapists, and tying someone to a product, which is very interesting. So when you align someone with a product they like its smell, they're probably going to want to use it and it becomes part of their experience.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think it's interesting. These are my words, but I think a lot of people don't think about that. It's such a, we could segue into essential oils now, but people smell something and they, it's automatic, right? It's a chemical sense. So I think a lot of folks quote out there don't register about the smell and their love of a product all the time. It's like this instinctual thing that happens. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me see. Well, I'll ask that question later. You have many different business ventures, and I know that you offer essential oil certification. You have when I met you, and you still do that through amygalper.com. And I want to segue now into the, I'll just read the question, discussing the fine line between the business of essential oils, which global billion-dollar industry, right? And the accessibility of essential oils and certification and the cost. And we've talked about this, you and I, in the past. So like, what if I don't have a lot of money and I want to become certified? You're like, how do you know where to go? And I think I just want to open this conversation up to our listeners because it's an important one. But
yeah, for sure. So yeah, so back to the beginning part of your question, I offer an aromatherapy certification program. It's a level one and level two program. Mm-hmm. So those of you that are listening obviously know all about aromatherapy certification because I'm sure a lot of people come here and are certified aromatherapists. But just to kind of review, right? Aromatherapy certification is not like licensed by any governmental agency, that the educational standards are set forth by the professional associations that have kind of come together and agreed, like if someone's going to actually call themselves an aromatherapist, they have to finish X amount of hours in this topic, X amount of hours in this other topic. You know, just kind of like a yoga teacher or any other kind of alternative care practitioner, right? They have to satisfy certain requirements. So when you go to them, like if you go to a yoga teacher, you don't want them to put you in a headstand if they don't know what in the world they're doing, right? You don't want to get hurt. So it's the same thing with an aromatherapist. Like you want to go see or work with an aromatherapist and know that they are properly trained. So professional associations like NAHA, like AIA, like IFPA, and there's a few other international ones, you know, put together what they called a curriculum that people have to follow. So what that means is if anyone wants to actually certify someone to be a professional aromatherapist, what they're teaching, their curriculum needs to be approved by one or all, if they choose, of those associations. Sort of like their curriculum gets the stamp of approval. So aromatherapy in action follows the curriculum set forth by NAHA, AIA, et cetera. So anyone who goes through my program, Aromatherapy in Action, once they complete the coursework and take the exam, they will get a certificate that recognizes them as a certified aromatherapist. So that is really important. But one thing I do want to say, which is what I think you were getting to through your other question, is because there are these standards, okay, and anyone and everyone who is teaching an aromatherapy certification program, okay, let's just take it in the United States, since that's mostly my audience right now, right? You know that they are following, like if they're really certifying you and you see that their school is an approved educator from NAHA or AIA or whatever, if you see that they're an approved educator, you know that they are following the exact same curriculum. So that means school A and school B and school C and school D and whatever, if they are on that approved educator list of NAHA, AIA, whatever, we're all teaching the same stuff, okay? Because we have to. We have to. We have to teach like X amount of hours on anatomy and physiology, X amount of hours on extraction, X amount of hours on the aromatherapeutic properties, X amount of hours on aromatic phytochemistry. Like we have to. So what that means is everyone who's teaching aromatherapy certification is teaching the same stuff. But where the difference lies, and this is with anything, right? And you can think about it in your own life, right? Is like their approach to it. One teacher may have a particular style where everything suddenly goes off like a light bulb for you. You like the you like their style, you like their approach, you like the way that they're doing it. And so that is something that is very important, right? When you're choosing a school, is you want to be able to choose like the style, the personality, the vibe of the school that you really resonate with. And just like we were talking about with beauty products, you know, it's about the person, right? And what you connect with, their story, the reason why they're doing it, et cetera. And then also, I think it has a lot to do with approach. You know, there are some schools out there that really have a very heavy scientific, research-focused, chemical constituent approach. And then there's others that have seemed to emphasize an approach about, you know, more intuitive kind of approach. So depending on where you are on that continuum, you may fall into wanting to study with someone. And where I see for me with aromatherapy in action, like one thing that has definitely been something that I've leaned into over the past 20 something years, and certainly has built my career as a product developer within the beauty space, specifically within clean or natural formulation, is this idea of blending and formulating. And so that is like the heart of my program. And what I really focus on when I'm teaching is I'm always talking about the importance of mastering blending, because I really believe if you are going to be an effective, sought after aromatherapist, you need to create beautiful smelling blends that actually work. It doesn't make sense if you're blending because you're just following certain molecules or whatever, and it doesn't smell very good. That's like never going to work, because really aromatherapy is about aroma. It's about scent. It's about connecting to smell. So the priority to any blend must be that it smells amazing to the recipient. Otherwise, it's like, why even do it? So that's something that I really emphasize. Like, that's my like unique, I guess, differentiator. And then as far as pricing, I know you brought in about education, you know, there is a massive discrepancy between the cost of aromatherapy education. There are some programs that are like $3,000 and like my program is like a tenth of that cost. So it's like, you know, and one of the reasons why I dropped my price so hugely is really because I want to make it more accessible. As I said in the beginning of our podcast or at some point in our conversation, more people are using essential oils than ever before in the whole world, in the whole history, okay, of aromatherapy. More people are using it than ever before. And that means we need more people in the market educating and teaching people faster. We need more people in there faster to tell people how to use essential oils. So in order to do it faster, we need to make it more accessible. And one thing that is kind of one of my goals.
Which that really speaks to me, because when I was studying with you and other teachers, it's like once you become certified, I remember maybe you said this, it's like your job to start educating others, and you'll find that you will be the educator. And one thing I loved seeing and realizing when I became a teacher was that just because you're certified doesn't mean you have to practice aromatherapy. You have the education, and you might choose to like become a formulator. Maybe you become a grower, like you could do so many things, but now have this foundation of what essential oils and aromatherapy are. And like, we've conversed, I appreciate your sharing the information's out there. It is nice to make it affordable for people. And I enjoyed this because you and I over the past few months have chatted, and it's like, I love community work. I'm very community focused. And then I love my high-end client work, and there has to be a way to do both. And there is. So I just think it's important. If I'm working at the soup kitchen and I help somebody, aromatherapy is really beneficial for the person that has food scarcity. Yeah, like I could really help that person. So like you're saying, education is super important.
100%. That's really the goal, you know, is like my goal is to get more people using it safely and effectively and realizing that aromatherapy is really all about the experience of smelling something. Okay. And we need to get that out there.
That's my next question. So, as you just said, you know, with aromatherapy, it is about smell. Yes, it's about therapeutic application and the molecules and the chemistry behind it and the antibacterial nature, all that good stuff. But I have a deep love for olfaction only over the years. And I know you really focus on smell and aroma and emotions. So, I would love for you to highlight our belief in the place of olfaction over, let's say, internal use, dermal application, and how just scent is beneficial. Because I know it's important.
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying this a lot. You know, our sense of smell really holds the secret to our well-being and our health. Really, truly, it does. And I'm not just saying that because like, oh, I believe it. It sounds so nice. It actually does. Like if you really understand how the aromatic molecules kind of trigger the chemical response in our physiological body without actually ever being absorbed into our bloodstream, but just from this electrical kind of chemical reaction, like you will understand its power in that way. And I think that when people are emphasizing, you know, taking essential oils internally or, you know, using them in all these different ways and thinking about the scent as a secondary option or not the primary reason why they would use it, then to me, I feel like they're kind of, I mean, this is going to be a strong statement, but they're kind of perverting the whole reason why we have essential oils. I mean, the whole reason they exist is to be smelled. If you wanted to use the plant for other kind of healing benefits, like eat it, make a tea out of it, use it as a poultice. Like, oh my God, these plants have so many amazing phytochemicals that are so powerful in healing our bodies. Like use them in all of those other ways. But like when we're talking about aroma. There's only one part of the plant that is available to us, and it should be focused just on the olfactory experience. And yeah, so I really feel strongly about that because, you know, and I'm a big believer in using essential oils in skincare, but at very low dilutions. And the idea there is specifically to trigger a sensorial olfactive response, because our understanding of self-care, of beauty, all of that really is connected to our emotional, psychological, and spiritual state. I mean, to me, beauty can't be separated from that. So while we connect to scent through skincare and beauty products, we are making those products more holistic immediately just by providing an aroma that kind of contributes to that experience of beauty ritual or self-care.
It is. I love that. It's beautifully said and very inspiring. You're always really inspiring. And I want to riff off of what you're saying. When we work with these highly concentrated substances called essential oils, they're very concentrated, and we have to think about sustainability too. So if I am, and I'm guilty of this, I've made medicines with essential oils and aromatics. I make tinctures. I do all this stuff, but I'm trying to be incredibly mindful of how much plant material it takes to get a pound of essential oil or a kilo. So I think within the conversation we're having is by stressing smell, olfaction, that it's also, dare I say, more sustainable.
Oh, 100%.
Have this conversation, right? Yeah.
It's absolutely. And I think you and I had this conversation before, and I loved what you said. I think that, you know, smelling an essential oil is the most sustainable way to use it. And I think people don't think about that. And so what that means is they are highly concentrated. To smell it, sometimes you only need to open up the bottle and take a sniff, or you just put like one drop on a cotton ball, and that is all you need in order to gain all of the rich, profound benefits from it. And you're also, you know, so you're using a very little bit, and it also is the safest delivery.
Yes.
Smelling an essential oil is the safest delivery and the most sustainable. And I think that when people start to argue about, you know, the how essential oils are unsustainable, you know, I mean, I think that just people are misusing them, number one. And that's, and unfortunately, there has been some terrible farming practices that have kind of taken over the globe right now that have really left a lot of the land and the availability of the aromatic plants, like really traumatized, so to speak. So there is problems, but that is like capitalism, industrial farming of all this stuff. But really at its core, it is not an unsustainable practice. Those practices from those big corporate farms are unsustainable, but so is a corporate farm that's farming soy or corn or whatever they're farming, right? So this is just farming practices, whether it's aromatics or food agriculture, that needs to be dealt with. But as far as like getting an essential oil out of a plant and really enjoying it, like, no, you know, I think that we need to use it mindfully and all of that.
Yeah. And in line with that, when I distill for hydrosols, as you know, and over the past, since I started to distill since 2017, I realize how little plant material I need. And sometimes I get a little essential oil from like fresh ginger or lavender, and in my day-to-day life, or if I'm blending for one-on-one clients, I don't need a lot of essential oils in my life, because generally I'm just using a little bit to make a very unique small product for somebody. So this idea of consumption and all the oils and just buying all this stuff, when I look back at my old self when I started, I'm like, I don't need a lot. And you only need that one drop, like we're saying, to really shift something.
Totally.
Yeah, I really appreciate this conversation, Amy Galper. So as we start to wind down our time together, I do want to say, you've shared a lot already, but I had my kind of best practices. Is there anything you wish you knew back, 20 years ago that you know now, that when you look at aromatherapy, essential oils, business, is there anything you're like, darn it? I really wish I knew that. It's a big question, but.
Oh my God, everything. I feel like I wish I knew all this stuff. It's hard. You know, I made so many, 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 many mistakes as a new emerging brand back in the early 2000s. Mm. So it was really learning by the seat of my pants. And I think also, I don't know. I mean, I have a massive list, but I think one, I'll leave with this, that I think we're always in a place of evolving and learning and growing. And, you know, I think that in this space of beauty and all of that, I think, you know, that is, it's just forever growing and evolving. You know, maybe many years ago, I'm trying to think, is there anything, you know, sometimes, I don't know, I've learned so much now, but sometimes I do think if I ever have some downtime, I would love to just dig a little bit deeper into plants, maybe take really, really study herbalism more focused, and maybe also skincare, like esthetician school, I guess you would call it. Like, those are like two things that I would be like, oh, I would love to like just stop the world for a few months and just like deep dive and gaining more education in that. But
well, that's really good words of wisdom, because we're always learning, right? So there's always opportunities to grow, and there's never the end until there's the absolute end. So that's inspiring, just to say, you know, if you find the time or set the time aside, make the time and study. And I remember teaching at your school, when I'd meet these amazing people that would come from around the globe, and they'd book like the intensive sessions, and they're like, this is my vacation. I'm taking my vacation. I'm visiting New York. I'm here for a week to do the intensive. And there is like that passion of being like, I am studying this. I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. It's a good reminder that we're always learning and there's always opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Well, is there anything you want to share? We talked about your Clean Beauty Accelerator, Aromatics in Action, or any shout outs you want to give about any upcoming ventures or offerings you have, or have we covered it all?
Not much. I think we've covered it all. I mean, I'm really easy to get hold of. So whoever's listening, you could just really, the best way to find me is on Instagram and direct message me, DM me. So if you're an emerging clean beauty founder and you really want to get your products up and out there into the world, reach out to me and we can have a conversation. And if you're looking to become a certified level one, level two aromatherapist, and you're looking for like a fun, engaging, accessible program, reach out. But like I said, I'll take any questions. So you could just DM me about anything. I'd be really thrilled to connect. So
Well, thank you for opening that to listeners. So Amy, as my first aromatherapy teacher, I really want to thank you for spending time with me today and sharing your knowledge and expertise.
Oh, Amy, it was such a thrill to be on your podcast. I'm so excited for you. I've been such a big cheerleader of yours. I know you have so much in you and so much to share, and I'm just so excited for you. So thank you so much. It was an honor to be here. Thank you.
Aww. Thank you, Amy. All right. Well, thanks everyone. As I say at the end of every episode, thanks for spending time with us, and ciao for now.